Okay, welcome back to Lifeline with Michael Hennessy on Near 90.3 FM. So please feel free to call us on 867-1190 or text us on 087-6944-500 if you would like to comment or join in on any part of the show. Now I am joined on the telephone by Professor Andrew Green, who is a consultant in clinical genetics based in Our Lady's Hospital in Crumlin. You're very welcome, Professor Green, and thank you for joining us on Near 90.3 FM.
Not at all. Glad to be here.
Okay. I think that we last spoke on December the 6th, 2017, when we were joined by Anne Lawler in relation to the rare genetic disease 22q11 deletion syndrome. Today, we would like to highlight Huntington's disease and, to a minor extent, Duchenne muscular dystrophy for our listeners. Can you tell us something about Huntington's disease, just for a start, and what is this condition?
So it is a genetic condition. It's a relatively rare neurological disorder, and it happens worldwide. And it's almost always an adult disorder. People with the condition, I suppose it's a fairly slow, insidious approach of the condition. You can't suddenly say when it started, when you did and when you didn't have it. But people with the condition gradually start to develop problems with movement disorders, which are kind of uncontrollable movements of their arms and legs, which is called chorea. So the old name for the condition was Huntington's chorea. But in addition, people often have difficulty with walking and coordination, and later on they have difficulty with mobility and often difficulty with feeding. And also people with the condition can start to develop problems where they become forgetful and start not to be able to recognize normal things and develop a form of an early onset, what you might call dementia, with the condition as well. So it's a very serious condition, and it's diagnosed really based on an assessment by a specialist neurologist who can make the diagnosis clinically, and there is a specific genetic test and a specific genetic change that happens in all people with Huntington's, for which there is a test available. It's probably been available for the last 20 years.
Okay, and are there many people affected by this disease, if I can describe it as a disease, in Ireland?
I think it's fair to say that, yes, it would be just classified as a significant and serious disease, and there's probably a couple of hundred people in Ireland. I'm not sure we know of all of those people as yet. There may be some people who have not been diagnosed with the condition, but we're aware of several hundred families with the condition, certainly.
Okay, and is there any cure for Huntington's disease?
Unfortunately, no. It's a serious condition. It's something for which there hasn't been any treatment. There can be some drugs that can help with movement disorders, and you can help people with nutrition, but it doesn't change the underlying effect that the condition gradually has on people's brains. So there isn't a specific cure at the moment, and obviously that's something that many people, both obviously families with Huntington's, but also many of the doctors and researchers working in the condition, are trying to aim for.
Okay, so is the exact mechanism of Huntington's currently understood?
Some of it is. I don't think you can say that all of it is. It's caused by an extra amount of DNA in one of a person's two copies of a gene on chromosome 4. They have an extra amount of what's called triplet repeat DNA, and as a result of which the protein that the gene produces has an extra amount of an amino acid called glutamine in it.
Okay.
And that glutamine in the protein tends to go out of solution in the brain cells and essentially start to accumulate and clog up the brain cells and cause them to deteriorate. That's a simplistic description of how Huntington's works. What the exact mechanisms for it beyond that isn't really well worked out.
Right.
But there is a lot of research being done on how Huntington's can cause neurological disease, but I don't think all the answers are there yet.
Right, okay. And now, last Wednesday, February the 28th, was International Rare Disease Day. Can you tell our listeners something about this event from your point of view as a consultant in genetics?
So there's this, I suppose people describe the rare disease paradox, that if you say rare is a disease, then it can often be something that will turn people off and say, well, what's that got to do with me, or what's got that to do with the health service? And each person may have their own individual rare disease, but there's thousands of them. And collectively, people with rare diseases are not rare. Probably 1 in 15, 1 in 17 of people will have some kind of rare disorder.
Right.
And the whole point of picking February the 28th, actually February the 29th was the day to pick it, because it's a rare day and it only comes around 1 4 years, but in fact it's moved on to put it on February the 28th so we can have it every year. And it highlights the concerns that people have with rare disease and tries to bring those issues to the fore, and I think that's a really good thing. Particularly because a lot of people who have rare diseases feel that they may have been told that you're only one of two people or two people in Ireland with the condition, there's nobody else around, nobody knows much about it, and often that's not the case, that there actually is a lot of information information and a lot of support for people with rare disease. And particularly now with a huge amount of international networking, there's huge numbers of Facebook pages and web pages for families with rare disease who can contact other families worldwide.
Okay, Dr. Green. In recognition of this day, I interviewed Patricia Towey from Huntington's Disease Association.
Yeah, and I've known the Huntington's Association for over 20 years. They're a very good group, yes.
Yes, and separately I also interviewed Amy Bramley from Duchenne Muscular Dystrophy Ireland. Can you also give our listeners just a small outline of muscular dystrophy? Is that connected to Huntington's? Are they the same type of disease?
They're both genetic conditions, but they're completely different in terms of how they affect people. There are hundreds of different types of muscular dystrophy. Probably the commonest and most well-recognized, although it's still rare, is a specific type which is called Duchenne muscular dystrophy, which is a different condition in the sense that it affects boys only, whereas Huntington's can affect boys and girls. Men and women. Duchenne comes on, starts showing signs in boys when they're about 5 or 6 because their muscle strength doesn't improve the way most boys would do, and they have difficulty walking and difficulty getting around. And there's a lot of constant muscle damage because their muscles are very vulnerable to breakdown due to their genetic problem. And it is a progressive condition, Duchenne muscular dystrophy, so often boys with the Duchenne type are quite disabled by it, and although intellectually they may be fine, their mobility is significantly limited, and many of them would be in wheelchairs from their early teens onwards. Right. And they can also then develop heart muscle disease, and sadly some boys with the condition may only live into their early 20s, so it is a very serious condition.
Okay. And is there ongoing research into trying to find a cure for these conditions? And is there any solid hope on the horizon?
So the research is kind of disparate because they're two different disorders and the research groups are separate. For Huntington's disease, which is the one we started with, there's been some recently exciting research done, mostly in London, where they've been looking to try and use new forms of what are called RNA silencing to be able to inject specific small molecules into the spinal fluid of people with Huntington's, and it's been shown to reduce the amount of the abnormal protein, the glutamine protein that I described earlier. This is only a very early study, but it's actually something that has some potential if it is followed through, but it's going to take years to work this out. But it's been the first sign of significant improvement for Huntington's, so that's really encouraging. Duchenne muscular dystrophy is actually quite a bit commoner than Huntington's, and the research there's been huge worldwide efforts to try and research ways of trying to correct the gene using lots of studies trying to put in new mini genes or look at trying to get other genes to activate them. The first gene therapy trials are only starting as a proof of principle at the moment, so it's taken a long time, particularly as the gene was actually described in 1987, which is 30 years ago. And it's only now that the first gene therapy trials are happening. So there's actually a greater emphasis on trying to do something for muscular dystrophy because there is some light for Huntington's and there is less at the moment for Duchenne muscular dystrophy, although there's an awful lot of people working and are hopeful for Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
Okay, Professor Green. One thing I didn't... is gene editing a realistic hope for cure for Huntington's?
There's been a lot of excitement about a new type of genetic ways of trying to alter particular gene sequences, which is called CRISPR-Cas9. I won't get into the detail of it, but it's been brought forward as a very good way of trying to manipulate genes in cells, and it has been shown to work in cell levels. It's not going to be easy to do that for muscular dystrophy because essentially you're going to have to try and edit every cell, every muscle cell that a boy would have, and that's not easy to do. So I'm not sure that the gene editing is going to be particularly helpful at the moment for muscular dystrophy. The problem with the Huntington's isn't actually as straightforward because it's an extra amount of genetic material that isn't easy to edit out. So I think for those conditions, gene editing may not be much help, but there are many other genetic conditions that it might be of help for, but not necessarily Huntington's or muscular dystrophy.
Okay, thank you for that. Now, do you think that there's a place for predictive genetic testing for these conditions, particularly Huntington's?
Well, the testing, I think, it comes in two different stages because in two different ways, I suppose. For Huntington's disease, it is an untreatable condition, but now there's a specific genetic test available. For it is possible for individuals who have the condition in their family to come forward and say, can I have a gene test to say whether I do or don't get this untreatable condition? And that's a very difficult decision. And this was when the gene was identified 25 years ago. There was a huge debate about whether it was appropriate for people to have tests for something that you don't have any treatment for. But the general consensus now is that if individuals want that and they know what they're getting into and they understand the limitations, they should do that if they want to. But in practice, only a very small number of people who have the condition in their family actually to choose to pursue that testing. And we do run a program for this in Ireland. I think we're the only centre to do it, and we probably see 15, 20 people a year to discuss predictive testing for Huntington's disease because it's in the family. So it's a small number of people, not because of the limitations of the service, but because not necessarily that many people may want it. But some do, and that's absolutely fine for those that do.
So do we do the actual genetic testing for Huntington's disease in Ireland?
Yes. In our laboratories, so we probably do 50 or 60, maybe sometimes 70 tests a year for Huntington's disease in Ireland.
All right, okay.
In our laboratory. Testing for muscular dystrophy is slightly different because it's a condition that is carried by women and affects boys. And again, for women who have Duchenne muscular dystrophy in the family, there is usually a test which can be offered to them to determine whether they do or won't carry it. That's not necessarily relevant for their own health, but it may be relevant if they're thinking about planning a family themselves. And again, we would provide a service for those families should they want it.
Okay. So we've taken just two examples of rare diseases today, Professor Green. Are there many other rare genetic conditions, apart from 22q11 or 11 deletion syndrome, that should be included here?
Yes. So I think the current number is around 7,000. But as more conditions are being described and the genetic base of those conditions described, it's probably getting closer to 8,000 at the moment. So there are many different types of rare genetic conditions, and with newer genetic technologies, we're now able to diagnose more people with those rare conditions so that they get an answer as to why they or their child may have the various clinical problems they have. So there are many, and there's a lot of work now being done about a European level to try and get together clinics for people with rare diseases and also link people across Europe with rare diseases to specialist centres so that if you have a particular rare disease and there's a specialist service based in Paris or Germany or London, that you could be linked to that and get the benefit of the expertise of those clinicians through setting networks across Europe. So that's a big help. And there's also a parallel network that families with rare disease will often connect and share experiences right across Europe and the world. There are many rare diseases, but there's an awful lot more information now. And the government has funded a rare disease office in Ireland over the last couple of years, which provides a lot of information on rare diseases.
Okay, so finally, Professor Green, is there any point missed in our conversation that you would particularly like to highlight in connection with these yourself?
I think, again, that getting the information and getting understanding and talking to doctors who understand the condition and talking to other families who have these conditions can often be a great help. And as I said, the Rare Disease Office and the Rare Disease Program, which is driven by a Department of Health Rare Disease plan, has been a big step forward for providing information and support for families who have lots of different rare diseases. And these are conditions where really you need both the families and the doctors involved working together rather than running in parallel. So I'm already speaking at a rare disease meeting this coming Saturday, and I'll often do others just so that I can work with the families. So it's something about partnership rather than trying to set up a doctors versus patients approach. It's much more important to try and help people to work together with the doctors and the families with these conditions.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much for joining us on Lifeline on Near 90.3 FM today, Professor Green. And I look forward to speaking to you again in the near future.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks very much.